Well, Christian friends, a question. Of the churches that you know, which would you describe as a successful church? Why would you describe them as a success? And what is the secret of their success? And would you call Amiens Park Chapel a successful church? What is a successful church? So as we continue our series, Doing Church, the successful church. So please come with me to 2 Corinthians and chapters 11 and 12. Now, in Corinth, success was admired. In Corinth, success was worshipped. Everyone was looking for the X factor. It was an age of celebrity. And this mindset had entered the church. And so when certain men turned up on the doorstep, claiming to be apostles, and they were dynamic, impressive, sophisticated, savvy, the Corinthians were wowed. They loved their aura of success. These men captured the imagination. And the Corinthians thought to themselves, well, if we hitch our church up to these men, we'll go places. We'll be as successful as they are. Well, if these men projected an image of strength and dynamism, where did that put the Apostle Paul, the man who had actually founded that church? Well, compared to these men, Paul looked a failure. Chapter 10, verse 10, for his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence, when he actually turns up and you look at him, his bodily presence is weak. And his speech, have you heard Paul preach? His speech contemptible. He's not much to look at. And actually, if you listen to Paul's preaching, well, there's not much to go on, really. Not much to listen to. Not when compared to these men, with their compelling personalities and their compelling preaching. In fact, Paul, compared to them, he looks a loser. In fact, Paul, compared to them, he doesn't even look like an apostle. All Paul seems to experience is one trouble after another. It just looks to us as though Paul can't even hold it together. Look, we're much better off with these guys. If Paul's an apostle, these guys are super apostles. It's a no-brainer. Let's go with them. But the danger is acute. It's not just that they might reject Paul, the man through whom these people were converted, is that they might end up rejecting the Jesus that Paul preached. Chapter 11, verse 2 says, Paul, I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy, for I have betrothed you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear, lest somehow as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For if he who comes preaches another Jesus, whom we've not preached, or if you receive a different spirit, which you have not received, or a different gospel, which you have not accepted, you may well put up with it. Paul's Jesus is the real Jesus. He's the Jesus of the cross. The Jesus who calls us not to a successful life, but to a crucified life. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. But the Jesus of these super apostles is another Jesus who calls us not to a crucified life, but to a successful life. As successful and popular and dynamic as his super apostles. Their Jesus is a winner. He has the X factor. He'll go down a storm in Corinth. But says Paul, verse 4, it's another Jesus, a different spirit, a different gospel. The danger is acute. You go with these men, you may well be walking out on the real Jesus. So how does Paul deal with the challenge of these men? Particularly when compared to them, he looks a loser. Well, these men loved to boast. They projected an aura of success. There was something of a swagger about them. If you like, they were Christian celebrities. Everyone wanted to hear what they had to say. There's a sense they may not have actually said it, but it was coming out from what they were doing and the way they were talking. We're the greatest. Okay, says Paul. If they boast of their success, I too will boast, verse 18, seeing that many boast according to the flesh, I also will boast. Verse 21, if they're not afraid to talk up their achievements, and Paul says, look, this is really against my better judgment, well, they talk about their achievements, I'll talk about mine. Yes, says Paul, let's talk about success. What is a successful ministry? What is a successful church? So please, I'll open in front of you 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and we're going to go from verse 22 to chapter 12, verse 10. What we'll do is we'll expound the passage, just go through it, look at what Paul is saying, and then we'll draw the lesson. So Christian friends, have we got the X factor? Are we a successful church? What's the secret of success? Well, let's listen to Paul's boasting. And the start is very promising, isn't it? Verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. So far in this boasting game, they're neck and neck. If they boast of their Jewish pedigree, says Paul, I'm certainly their equal. And verse 23. Are they ministers of Christ? And then Paul says, I must be mad talking like this. Says Paul, I can go one better. Now Paul's got the Corinthians' attention, hasn't he? Can you see the Corinthians craning their necks? He can go one better than the super apostles? What's Paul going to say? Miraculous victories, adoring crowds, power ministries, invincible strength. Has he been feted by the great and the good? Paul respected by all? What's he going to say? Verse 23, are they ministers of Christ? I can go one better. In labours more abundant. No one has worked as hard or as fruitfully as me, says Paul. Great, Paul, come on, tell us your triumphs. Verse 23, in labours more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes, minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned. And now can you see the Corinthians turning to each other and looking at each other? What sort of boasting is this? We've never heard boasting like this before. Yes, says Paul, when I preached, there were no adoring crowds. I didn't conquer them by the sheer power of my oratory. When I preached, they gave me a good whipping. They threw me in prison more times than I can remember. Verse 23, in deaths often. This is the apostle. I was in fear of my life. Verse 24, 5 times the Jews gave me a thrashing. 3 times I was beaten with rods. And once when I stood up to preach, the admiring crowd, they picked up stones to stone me. Gideon Ousley, an 18th century Methodist preacher in Ireland, massively used by God. When he used to come to a town to preach, if he could, he would preach with his back to a shop window. Because in that way, the crowds were less likely to throw stones at him. Nearly 30 years ago, I remember speaking to a little old lady. She'd been a missionary in Colombia. And her husband would preach in the open air. And they used to look at the ground beforehand, before he started preaching. And if there were lots of nice, round stones, they used to say with a degree of irony, this is a good place to preach the gospel. Because frequently they would be stoned. The authentic servants of Christ are so often hated, rejected, despised. Well, okay, Paul, you've had a difficult time. But look, as you travelled from place to place, didn't the Lord send his angel before you to roll out the red carpet? What says Paul? It wasn't quite like that. Verse 25, 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I have been in the deep. Yes, says Paul, sometimes I turn up late for meetings, unavoidably delayed. My plans often came undone. And since I've been serving the Lord, I've never felt safe. The number of times I've escaped by the skin of my teeth, verse 26, in journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. If the thieves don't get me, the Jews do. If the Jews don't get me, the Gentiles get me. I'm not safe anywhere. I'm not safe in the city. I'm not safe in the wilderness. I'm not safe at sea. And if after surviving all of that, I slump exhausted and say, I can't take any more, somebody stabs me in the back. In perils of false brethren. So, Christian friends, has Paul got the X factor? Can he compete with these super apostles? Can he go one better? What sort of boasting is this? But this is authentic Christianity. Okay, Paul, you've been through a hard time, but didn't God give you some sort of superhuman, supernatural strength to face down these impossible odds? Well, no, says Paul. Verse 27, in weariness and toil. Sometimes I didn't always enjoy the full support of the churches. So I had to work hard with my hands. Think of it. What job would I take? The great apostle taking a badly paid, menial job which left him worn out. Do you think God can use exhausted people? Weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. There'd be times when Paul would turn up on your doorstep, cold, hungry, threadbare, exhausted. To all appearances, a failure. Certainly not the image of strength and dynamism. And as if all that wasn't enough, then says Paul, what really stresses me out is the churches. Verse 28. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. I'm constantly on edge, waiting for news. I don't have peace of mind most of the time because I'm fretting over the churches. And at times, says Paul, it's unbearable, especially verse 29, when I hear that my people have been made to stumble. It drives me mad. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. The pastor wrote to Thomas Boston and complained, I only have 28 people in my church. Boston wrote back, I think you'll find that's quite enough to account for on the day of judgment. Most pastors I know are on the edge. They look at their people, and some aren't going on, and some aren't listening, some are complaining, there's a bitterness that's somehow got in, and some are wandering off, and some don't even turn up. And sometimes it's just a look in a face, and it eats you up, and your stomach turns over, and you're robbed of your peace. Well, that's just one church. But Paul can speak of all the churches he'd planted. Oh, by now the Corinthians are looking at each other and wondering, what sort of boasting is this? It doesn't even begin to compare with the superhuman achievements of these super apostles. Exactly, says Paul, exactly, verse 30. If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity, which concern my weakness. Let them boast about their success. But when you're writing my CV, I want you to call attention to my weaknesses. Because on that CV, with all my weaknesses, those are the authentic marks of an authentic servant of Jesus Christ. That's what real Christianity is about. Oh yes, and one more thing, says Paul, verse 31. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is blessed forever, knows I'm not lying. In Damascus, the governor, under Aretas the king, was guarding the city of the Damascenes with a garrison, desiring to arrest me. No way out, Paul. So Paul, how were you rescued? Was it like Peter, God sent an angel? Or did you blind the garrison with a display of power? Or maybe you just broke down the doors with a word of command? No, says Paul, verse 33. I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped from his hands. Paul the superhero, crouching inside a basket, lowered from a window in the wall, and as soon as it hits the ground, he legs it off into the night. Christian friends, do you see? What are the true marks of an apostle? What is the real evidence that God is at work? What's the true secret of success? Well, let's read on. Obviously, there are no chapter divisions in Paul's letter. They've been added on later. So chapter 12, verse 1, it is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I don't really want to do this, but I'm going to. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. Yes, visions and revelations. These men, they boasted in their experiences of God. Wonderful, transforming, heavenly experiences. When these men spoke of their experiences of God, they had the Corinthians on the edge of their seats. They'd have their sharing meetings. They'd stand up and, this is what happened to me this week. This is the experience I had. This is the vision that God gave me. Let me tell you about it. And the Corinthians, open mouthed, on the edge of their seats, tell me. Oh, says Paul, I'm going to tell you about my experiences. And though I'm talking about me, I'm going to put a distance between the Paul who had the revelation and the Paul that you see today. So when I say I know a man, it's really me. But let's keep it like that, in case it sounds like I'm drawing attention to myself. You know, the great Apostle Paul caught up to heaven. Wow, tell us more, Paul. I don't want you to think of me as somebody special. I want you to take me for who I really am. Verse 6. I refrain lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. So what happened, Paul? What was your experience? Tell us. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body, I do not know, or whether out of the body, I do not know, God knows, such a one was caught up to the third heaven. I know such a man. Whether in the body or out of the body, I don't know, God knows. He was caught up into paradise and heard. Yes, Paul, come on, tell us. What did you hear, Paul? Tell us. And heard inexpressible words which are not lawful for a man to utter. What? Paul, you've actually been to heaven, whether it was in the body or out of the body, you don't know, but you are actually in heaven itself, and you can't even talk about it. No, I can't. It's not lawful for me to tell you anything about it. Verse 5. I don't mind boasting in the Paul of 14 years ago, but the only thing I want to draw attention to today, this Paul, I want to draw attention to my weakness. I don't want you thinking of me as some sort of spiritual Superman. All right, Paul, okay. What did this experience do for you? Were you transformed? Were you catapulted into new heights of spirituality? When you had this great spiritual experience, did it make you dynamic, victorious, successful? Did it give you the X factor? Thus says Paul, my situation was transformed, I can tell you that. I've never been the same since. Verse 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, so there's more than one, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Since that day, says the apostle, I have known nothing but weakness, heartaches, satanic assaults. I may have been lifted up to heaven, but I've been brought down to earth with a bump. Heavenly experiences have been replaced with satanic beatings. And far from irresistible victories, since then, all I've known, I've just felt myself in the thick of the warfare. A thorn in the flesh. A messenger of Satan. You ever had a thorn in the flesh? Could you hop, skip and jump? Slows you down, doesn't it? Thorn in the flesh. Slows you down. If you get it in your leg or your foot, it slows you down to a painful limp. And far from feeling strong and invincible, you feel fragile. And says Paul, my thorn in the flesh was so painful, it was satanic. What was it? Well, we don't know, do we? But what's interesting is that the Canaanites in the Old Testament were a thorn in the flesh of Israel. So maybe this thorn in the flesh was a Canaanite, not a something, but a someone doing Satan's work and making Paul's life a misery. Lest I be exalted above measure. But God has given me someone who's made my life a misery. I've never felt so weak. Christian friend, do you know that feeling? Not a something, we can sometimes live with the somethings, can't we? It's the someone. The someone who makes my life a misery. And you've been robbed of your sleep, and you've been robbed of your peace, and you can't concentrate. And maybe when the phone goes, or you look in your inbox, or that letter comes through the door, and you look at the postmark, and you feel sick in your stomach, don't you? Well, that's just what Paul felt. Yeah, but Paul, didn't you pray about it? Yes, says Paul, verse 8, concerning this thing I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me. And the Lord heard you and granted you victory? No. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Paul, you're more useful to me, troubled, pained, weak, feeling sick in your stomach, unable to concentrate because of these things that are going on. You're more useful to me like that. Why? Because you keep coming back to me for grace. Because you keep depending upon me for help. Because you'll keep looking to me for strength. And in that way, whatever success is achieved in your ministry, Paul, it won't be down to you. It won't be your doing. It will be my doing. Every blessing, every success, every triumph, it won't be traced back to Paul. It'll be traced back to the God Paul serves. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Not a sudden burst of dynamism, a blinding glory, feeling weak and then suddenly breaking into powerful life. Look at the strength, feel the power. On the contrary, God's strength is at work through that very weakness that Paul feels. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Verse 10, therefore I take pleasures in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Christian friend, did you hear that? What's the secret of Paul's success? For when I am weak, then I am strong. The strength to preach when he had nothing left. But preach he did. and thousands converted. The strength to plant churches all across the Gentile world. The strength to write half the New Testament. The strength to unite believing Jews and believing Gentiles out of two peoples to make one new people. The strength to stand before kings and emperors. This small, weak, vulnerable man. In his own words, verse 11, nothing. That's what I am, I'm nothing. So the success, the blessing, it wasn't down to Paul. It was when he looked to Christ in all his need that the power of Christ was upon him. And then when things happened, as happened they did, it wasn't Paul's doing. It was Christ's. And in that way, God gets all the glory. So, Christian friends, now you know. What makes a successful church? Is it strong, dynamic leadership? Is it giftedness and flair? Is it fantastic buildings? State-of-the-art interiors? Is that the X factor that we're looking for? If it is, we don't need the Lord, do we? If it's those things, we don't need Him. We can do it ourselves. What makes a successful church? Its weakness. Its weakness in all its manifestations. Because when we're little in our own eyes, and we know that we can't do it, and we go to Christ, and His power rests upon us, then when the blessing comes, then when success is achieved, it can't be our doing. It's all His doing. And He gets all the glory. Do you want to change the world? Would you send for uneducated fishermen? Do you need a mother for the Messiah? Would you pick an unmarried teenager, a nobody whose days are hard and probably very dull? Do you want to confound the Bible experts of Jerusalem? Or would you push to the front a new convert who's been blind from birth? You read about it in John 9. Just weakness, weakness, weakness. But then you see the power of Christ rests upon them. And all the world can see that when the blessing comes, when there's progress, it can't be their doing. It's not them. It's His doing. Success comes through weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong. We look at our heroes, don't we? But Martin Luther got depressed. And John Calvin, he was a refugee, hedged in on every side by pressures, trouble, conflict. There wasn't even any peace in his home. He had at least three children. They all died in infancy. He suffered from migraines, pleurisy, gout, hemorrhoids, kidney stones. He passed one kidney stone the size of a hazelnut. Was he some sort of machine? He was a broken man. He lived a life daily that was broken. But he was a man on whom the power of Christ rested. You have John Wesley, tremendous labors, thousands converted. But his marriage was a disaster. Think of Charles Spurgeon. We think of him perhaps as one of the greatest preachers of all, don't we? But a third of his time is spent out of the pulpit through ill health. You look at these men and what do you see? You see weakness, weakness, weakness. Nothing but weakness. But what did that weakness do? It kept them small. It kept them depending. So that when the success came, it was God's doing and not theirs. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. When I am weak, then I am strong. Success comes through weakness. Successful churches are full of weak, needy, dependent Christians written on the CV of authentic Christianity and written on the CV of every successful Christian worker is those words of verse 10. Infirmities, reproaches, needs, persecutions, distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So as we close, Christian friends, what of you? What's on your CV? Are you troubled? Vulnerable? Are you weary? Are you distressed? Are you sick and in pain? In needs? Maybe wondering how you'll keep going. And is there a messenger of Satan who is making your life a misery? It's not a something, but it's a someone, and they won't go away, and they dog your steps, and you feel you're living under their shadow, and you've prayed for it to stop, but it just goes on and on and on. And have you come to the end of yourself? And actually, on a Sunday, you can hold it all together when God's people are around you, but actually when you get home, you can't hold it all together. And that's the real you. You can't hold it all together. Then, Christian friend, recognize you're letting no one down. Least of all the Lord. Recognize that God is at work. Recognize that you're just the person that Christ uses. So go to him. Depend upon him. Lord, here I am. I can't do it. I've come to the end of myself. I've got nothing left. I can't even give a cup of cold water in your name as I should. But Lord, come to me. Send your grace. Give me your strength. Work through my weakness. May the power of Christ be upon me. And then you see, when the blessing comes, it's clearly not your doing, is it? You know that. That's not me. I can't do that. So it's not your doing, because you're nothing. It must be his doing. And in that way, he gets all the glory. Dependent Christians who go and keep going to Jesus, if you like, they have the X factor. And dependent churches who go to Jesus, it's they who witness true success. Have you ever had a new jumper? And then you catch a thread, don't you? Maybe it's got a pattern on it or something. You catch a thread and it all begins to unravel and unwind. Well, don't be surprised in church life if God spoils our new jumpers. Just in case we think that when the blessing comes, well, it's all because of our new jumper. We've got something special in the church now. We've done something new. We've taken a new initiative. We've got more gifts, more flair, more something about us. Just in case we think it's our doing, God will just pull the threads in our jumper and something in church life will drop in and think, oh, no. So that when the blessing comes, we know actually it's his doing. It can't be due to us. And he gets all the glory. So how do you build a successful church? What's the X factor? What do you need? What are the ingredients? You need weak, fragile, dependent people who know that they are weak. Who, like Paul, say, I'm nothing. But a people who are in love with Jesus Christ. And who in all their weakness go in dependence upon him. Do we have that here?